This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham, my co-host today, is Rod Butler, who are talking NASCAR. And we've got a few tidbits here, news and notes, items to go into. First off, the 2019 schedule has been released, and a lot of highlights. And Rod, I'm going to let you go through them. I peeked through the schedule and kind of some of the highs and lows, and I noticed, again, our usual races, Bristol and Richmond and Martinsville on the schedule a couple times each, early season, late season runs, and then a nice playoff nighttime start for that playoff later in the year, and Daytona. So, we're talking NASCAR, and the schedule, I guess the season doesn't start too far off from now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's already starting, the shuffling's already beginning, and then some of the major things, of course, you'll have the media week, which will be coming up in January. That'll be coming up again, and then that'll be leading up before the Daytona 500. But the most interesting thing that came out, I think, in this release was the schedule. And the race times are what's so strange about the schedule this time around. For a lot of the races, it's not going to be a big difference. You're going to see a normal starting time. For Bristol in the spring race in April, usually about 2 o'clock. And that's been a mandatory thing for Bristol, Tennessee for a long time, that they always have to start a race sometime after about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So if they've got that window, they're fine. But here's where the changes are. And one of the big changes that's coming out of this, to me, that jumped out, was that, Daytona 500 qualifying is going to be scheduled on the same day as the Clash Invitational for the second straight year. So they're sticking with that format. And then the Daytona 500 will start at 2:30. Not a big change there, but this is where we start seeing some changes. When we start getting to the playoffs, by the time we get to Las Vegas, and that'll be in the fall, around late summer, fall, Las Vegas, the race there is going to shift to a nighttime race. A lot of the problem there has been the intense desert heat that they've had each time that they have raced there over the last several years. Well, this time around, they're going to actually be going to more of a nighttime race. And then here's another interesting part. Martinsville's October 28th race is going to shift a half hour to a 3 p.m. start, meaning this race will go a little bit longer for the stretch under the lights near the finish. Now, what's this all boiled down to? I think it boils down to ratings, trying to go and get some more people involved and at least following the way this playoff picture is going to take place. I think they've not touched the majority of the races as they go through July 4th and into the middle part of summer. But by the time we get to Bristol, of course, Bristol's always a night race, but by the time we start getting there, there's Bristol, there's going to be a Richmond in there, and now you've got that Las Vegas in there. And so you're setting the tone kind of, to me in one way, NASCAR kind of returning to its roots, so to speak, and putting this as a Saturday night special sort of thing on to where it maybe draws some more audience into watching this on, say, for example, a Saturday or a Sunday night so they can get some ratings.
Yeah, I love night races. I mean, it's like you were talking about, the tradition is at your local dirt track, those are night races. Friday night drags and Saturday nights, the oval track races, whatever the case may be where you are. And that's what we're used to. And, NASCAR's kind of stumbled a couple times into having some primetime races. There was that Daytona 500 a few years ago that had some weather delays that pushed it to a nighttime race. And, boy, that one got watched by a lot of people. You'd think that they would take the hint and kind of move everything, or more at least, in that direction. And they are. As you said, the schedule this year is moving more, especially at playoff time when we're paying more attention to it, I guess, to those night races. But, man, I love night racing. I think that's when it's at its best.
I enjoy the night racing a lot because, it's the difference in the track, too. From the daytime, the track is hot, it's sticky. You really just don't know. You've got at least an advantage there at that point. And if the car, one way or another, is dialed in, you're going to be murdering everybody on the track the way you're running. Or you're going to be loose and all over the place, one way or the other. By the time that we get a race that maybe starts in the afternoon time, and then the sun is going down, you still have that heat in the track, but then it changes the track and it forces the teams to have to adjust as they go on into the evening. And, we could be looking at an October race at Martinsville that could be either warm, it could be a hot day of one of those Indian summer sort of deals, or it could be just downright cold when you get to Martinsville on October 28th. So these teams will have to adjust and they'll have to play it by ear, using the things that they have learned earlier in the season to be able to adapt going into these races. But I love the night racing scenario, and I still think that we are maybe not quite yet seeing it on the horizon, but you know, there was a suggestion brought up here not long ago to move this race or move some of these races to Wednesday night, move them to prime time, and let them be a big time event where they would be televised on television and broadcast in some way. But we've not gotten to that point yet, so we're still on the weekend sort of deal yet. But that could be on the horizon. Who knows?
Yeah, that Martinsville race, that could be the kind of race you're wearing your hunting gear to. If it's depending on the temperature that day, and it could be 80 degrees, it could be either way. But yeah, that'll be fun when we get to that stage. So now let's switch gears. Let's go to Jamie McMurray. Jamie McMurray's got a lot going on, and oh boy, I can't even summarize it up. So you just, what's the latest with Jamie McMurray?
Well, Jamie McMurray, he's going to race Daytona. He's going to race in a Chip Ganassi car for the Daytona 500. But now it seems to be that there was some fanfare that came out about, of course, Kurt Busch joining Chip Ganassi racing team. We talked about that last week. But now, as it stands, it appears to be that Jamie McMurray is going to move into some sort of managerial role at Chip Ganassi Racing. And he has an eliminated possibility of a new role as a TV analyst. So he's going to run the 500 before moving on to this managerial role and then a new role as a TV analyst. And it does not say right now who it will be, if it will be for Fox or if it will be for NBC or if it will be some studio show that they will have. My bet is it will probably be one of the studio shows in Charlotte that they have that comes out either for Fox or for NBC one way or the other. So he'll be one of those studio analysts talking about the race from the prior week and probably talking about it from a managerial standpoint of how things are. And, you know, Chip Ganassi wants to kind of phase him in. Is this the end of Jamie McMurray Racing? I don't think so, but at the same time, I think they're trying to probably whet his appetite a little bit more for the managerial or at least running the show for somebody or maybe for himself later on down the line.
What do you think of a racer, you know, doing a one-off like this? Danica Patrick ran Daytona last year as a sort of one-off. We've seen other NASCAR stars when they're, you know, sort of transitioning to their next career, TV or manager or whatever they're going to do. Do these one-offs. What do you think of that? And what do you think of the guys and gals in the garage? What do they think of this?
Well, I think for Danica Patrick last year, it wasn't a good thing. I think she wanted to go out, quote-unquote, in the blaze of glory, so to speak. But she was struggling to get everything organized to where she could at least be at Daytona and then also be at Indianapolis when it came time for the 500. This thing with Jamie McMurray is not going to be a big departure, so to speak, from what they already have at Chip Ganassi Racing. They have a big arsenal of a lot of people there, and Chip Ganassi can move those people around and move them into positions where they can go. And Jamie McMurray, he knows them. He knows them in that team. So I think they're going to have that much, at least, of a positive going their way. Now, if he tries to race any more during the season, it puts pressure on some of the other Chip Ganassi teams. And when we're talking about that, we're talking about Kurt Busch, who'll be moving to the one car, and then Kyle Larson, because that'll be taking away resources from those particular cars that could very well, you know, do well as the season goes on. And I think that's what Chip Ganassi's probably putting his bets on right now, that Kurt Busch may be in that final playoff position, and Kyle Larson, after all the bad luck he had this year, will be in a playoff position too. So, in a way, it's a distraction, but I don't think it's going to be such a big deal for the Daytona race for Chip Ganassi Racing. But like you mentioned, Danica last year, it was a distraction. It caused some issues. You know, she didn't finish in either race as good as she could have. She finished, I think, a DNF at Daytona, DNF also at Indianapolis. So, you know, here she is. You know, she kind of went out on the downside of this. For Jamie McMurray, he's been strong on the super speedways. He's performed well at Daytona. It's a last chance for glory for him.
Switching gears again, National Motorsports Press Association Hall of Fame has two new members. Take us into that story, Rod.
Well, I kind of wondered why it took so long for at least these two to ever get in there, but they have some very strict credentials on how some of these drivers get in. But Jeff Gordon and Red Farmer, they're going to be inducted into the National Motorsports Press Association Hall of Fame class of 2019. Now, Jeff Gordon, of course, is already in the Hall of Fame, the NASCAR Hall of Fame, but You know, his first race came when he was 20 years old, the 1992 season finale. That was the last year for Richard Petty also. And then, you know, he came in, his last real race that he has run in was in 2016 during the fall race when he was driving in relief for Dale Earnhardt Jr. And he's had a stellar career. And then Farmer at the same time, he came in at the age of 20, finished 45th in 1953. At 45th, that's a lot of cars on the beach at Daytona and the road course in a field of 57 cars. But at the same time, in his Talladega race that he had, oh, wow, he came in with some of his greatest achievements on the short track in the Southeast, and he had some top fives at Middle Georgia Raceway in Macon and another top five that he earned at Talladega in 1952. And Red Farmer's known for a lot of the stuff of the tinkering underneath the hood to make that car faster or the suspension and different things like that. And you got to have somebody that's drove the car that knows how to work on the car in order for the car to perform the best. So both of those will be inducted into ceremonies Sunday, January 27th in Charlotte. So it's good to see Red Farmer finally going to be recognized. He'll be in the Motorsports Press Association Hall of Fame with Jeff Gordon.
And last but not least on our news and notes for NASCAR this week, a stretch of Route 29 in the Danville, Virginia area has a new name, and I assume it has a new name, even though you might not be able to see the road still. A lot of snow in our part of the world here the last couple of days, but a new name for that stretch of 29. Talk about that.
Well, I think this is a well-deserved naming of a stretch of highway on U.S. 29, much like it was for the induction into the Hall of Fame in 2015 of Wendell Scott. I've had a lot of friends that have argued with me over the whole thing of Wendell Scott being in the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And one of the main reasons that they would argue with me is because they would say it's not right for him to be put in the Hall of Fame on the count of, in many cases, they use this as a controversial subject, the color of his skin. I didn't think that Wendell Scott should be put in the Hall of Fame just because of the color of his skin. The man was a racer. He won a number of races, had the races taken away from him, ran one race against Bobby Allison, and they put him to one place where they gave him so much of the prize money while Bobby Allison or another driver was down the way from him getting the trophy, kissing the trophy girl, and also getting the bigger stretch of the money. Wendell Scott was a great driver. It just happened to be the color of his skin was black, but he wasn't treated the right way when he was in NASCAR to begin with. And then when he finally got inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2015, to me it kind of took some pressure off of me of the way I had felt about him all this time. Because for this family, for him to run NASCAR and then to also get his recognition where it's due, of course, he's passed on now, but it's great now because it's a tribute to Danville's, as they call him, one of their native sons, more than anything else. It's not just a road, but it's a highway. But, you know, you're going with a little more speed than on your typical street, at least on this stretch of the road is the way that they're referring to. But Warwick Scott, who is Wendell Scott's grandson, he established a foundation in his grandfather's name, which I think is great, too, providing STEM tutoring to after-school and summer programs for at-risk and underserved youth. And more than anything else, he says his grandfather was about the underserved, the underprivileged population. That's what he lived for, and that's where his passion lied. So a man that was a cab driver, ran people around in Danville and different places, and then he'd go race on the weekends. And sometimes he would lap the field and absolutely smoke some of the regular drivers, but then he didn't get the equal recognition that he should have gotten in victory lane. I think it's another great honor for this man, and it's a long time coming, but I'm at least glad that they've got the stretch named after Wendell Scott.
Yeah, it's a stretch I'm familiar with. Whenever I go to North Carolina for sports coverage, be it Greensboro, Raleigh, Charlotte, I take 29 through Danville. Danville's right on the border of North Carolina, Virginia. And that stretch of roads, actually, yeah, if I've got it right, it's the expressway. You know, the 29, there's a 29 business that goes through Danville, but then there's an expressway, and that expressway can catch you. It's a good expressway, and it definitely is appropriate to be named for a NASCAR legend. So that is a nice honor. So Speaking of the snow, as we finish up our podcast here, Rod, how much snow did you get down your way down in Wise?
We got about 12 inches of snow, 10 to 12 inches of snow, and it's sort of melting because, I mean, the main thing is the ground was warm underneath, and so it's kind of going away now. But, you know, we're already into, we've missed our third straight day for schools down here because of the roads and the condition. And I don't know if you saw it on the news or not, but speaking of Bristol, I was getting ready to tell you something else here about Bristol in just a second, but from a stretch going on I-81 from Abingdon all the way down to the Pinnacle on the Tennessee side there near Bristol. It was about a 20-mile stretch, and it was a traffic jam the other night of semis, and it was a mess. And speaking of the Pinnacle, I want to also say, too, anybody that's maybe up in the Waynesboro area or around Central Virginia and they're wanting to come down maybe to visit with family or something like that, they're coming down this way. I can tell you, Speedway and Lights at Bristol Motor Speedway, they are back open. The only thing that is not open at this point is the ice skating rink they have there at Bristol Motor Speedway. The roof collapsed on it. It's going to be closed until further notice due to the snow damage. But the Speedway and Lights, they're back up and they're running, and so is the one down to Charlotte, Charlotte Motor Speedway. So
I'll be heading down to Charlotte myself, going to the Belk Bowl, the football game, UVA versus South Carolina, coming up at the end of the month. So, yeah, we'll see if it's see what's going on down that way. Well, Rod, I want to thank you for your time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.